generate on Amazon is all about like building your listing in a way that accurately showcases the product while still selling it. Because it's so easy to return stuff on Amazon, you're probably going to run into a higher return rate. So it's important to like give people all the information they need to make a proper decision the first time. A really good example of this is compatibility. If you're selling a smart home product and you're not compatible with Apple HomeKit, say it. In like the sizing world, can you provide like an image of a model wearing the product and then provide like the height, weight, size of that particular model? If you're selling sunglasses, like different face shapes that it's good for, like how can you make sure that a customer like feels confident making a decision the first time so they get the product and they're happy with it?
If you haven't yet used Motion, the creative analytics platform used by top e-com and D2C brands like Fiori, True Classic, The Farmer's Dog, Hexclad, and hundreds more to ship winning ads, here's why you should try it out. Everyone knows that the right creative is the number one lever for success with paid ads. That's how you make money. But consistently shipping new winning creative? You're going to need your media buyers and your creative teams on the same page. Right now, you're probably spending hours tiring away going back and forth between Google Sheets and your ad platforms and tools, and then spending even more time plugging it all into different decks for the rest of your team. In a perfect world, you could have an elegant way to combine visual assets and performance data so media buyers can save time and creative teams can get the details they need to make great ads all in one place. And that's where Motion comes in. In seconds, you can build powerful visual reports using data from your ad accounts. You can monitor your performance metrics and see your visual assets in the same platform. No need to go back and forth across multiple apps. You'll finally have media buyers and creative teams working together to create and scale your next big winner. If you're ready to learn how the best D2C and e-commerce brands use Motion to ship winning Meta, TikTok, and YouTube ads, book a demo today or start a free trial at motionapp.com/DTC. Even better, Motion offers a monthly subscription plan so you can dodge those annoying annual contracts. Get 50% off your first month when you use the link motionapp.com/DTC on signup. It's all killer, no filler. I'm Eric. It's a snow day here in Victoria. It should have been actually a snow day. I should have my daughter playing video games over there, but she's not. She's at school. Snow's on the ground here in Victoria, which is a rare occurrence. Our Amazon friends are back on the podcast, which is not a rare occurrence. This happens all the time. You guys just keep coming back, which is great. So you have more to say about this amazing platform that we love. But what are we talking about today? We're talking about the audits that we do with the number of people that come in to talk to us, and basically how our listeners can steal these audit tactics for themselves. Who wants to kick us off with how we think about this?
So one of the big issues that brands, incoming brands that we talk to run into is they honestly don't know what their campaigns are doing in a lot of cases, because the way Amazon advertising works is a lot of keyword targeting is built through broad match. A lot of it's built through auto targeting. A lot of it's product targeting. And because of this, a campaign that might be listed as a prospecting campaign actually is hitting branded a lot. A good example of this, I always use running shoes. If you're targeting broad match running shoes and you're Nike, that broad match running shoes targeting can hit Nike running shoes, Air Force One running shoes, or those running shoes. I'm not a big sneakerhead,
yeah,
despite the running shoe example every single time. But what people don't notice is they just see that broad match running shoes has like a 6 ROAS. Like, oh, we're killing it on running shoes. Our prospecting campaign is off the chain. You know what I mean? But what really happens is they're just hitting branded that whole time. And so it looks like their ads are performing, but they're not. So it's a very simple thing that we do all the time. Brands are incoming, and you can just pull the search term reports for everything. So ignore all the campaign structure, all that stuff. Don't go into the campaigns and look for it. Just pull the search term report for the last like 65 days is the longest spec you can go. Pull it for all your sponsored product and all your sponsored brand if you're running them. And just make like a keyword filter list, like, you know, Nike, Jordan, Air Force, whatever their other shoes are called. Like, just make a quick list, make a list of all your ASINs so that you also catch all the product targeting ones, and just filter those. Then you get your total branded spend in sales. Take that out of the total spend in sales, and now you have your actual non-branded versus your branded. Even our campaigns that we're actively managing, where we're very specifically trying very hard to make sure that branded is not corrupting our non-branded, even those still see some bleed through. People misspell a brand name or people get some cross-target product match by accident, things like that. Like, we're actively negating them out of those campaigns, but even those campaigns see it. So the ones that aren't actively doing it like that have huge percents of branded. So they'll come in and be like, no, we have a 5 ROAS and we want to maintain that. And we're like, well, really, you have a 4.5 ROAS on branded and you have a 0.5 ROAS on non-branded. So like, if you just want us to spend on branded for you, we can do that all day.
But it's a real bubble burst, you know, just so you probably prick a lot of bubbles with people thinking they're all that. And then you probably can get efficient about both jobs better when you have them broken out. You can get more aggressive or get more efficient at bidding on brand, as well as expand your breadth of your keywords.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And then you can also understand, like, so if we're looking at a brand to do an audit, typically they're trying to increase revenue or increase efficiency, or as every brand wants, do both at the same time. But when you understand that breakdown, you can look at, well, based on the branded search volume, which you can get through keyword tools, you can say, well, are they capturing all the branded volume? Or by segmenting out, can we get a little bit more efficiency and a little bit more volume? And then you kind of have a prediction of what that's going to be. And then you can look at your generic spend and say, hey, here's our return on generic. We might be able to get a little bit more efficient by running a better structure, but we're running approximately this ROAS. So as you scale your share of non-branded spend, your overall total return is going to come down, because you're bidding on lower return words. If you can then make a prediction on where you think you can scale that to, you can figure out where your overall account return is going to be. And then you can have a really good conversation with the brand that says, hey, you know what? Like, we can get these gains to branded. We know branded's not super exciting, but we'll get some efficiency gains. We'll segment. We'll know what we're spending on and what our return is. And we'll start spending a generic, but that's going to have this impact to overall total ROAS. And then you can say, like, where do you want to operate from a total ROAS perspective? And is that in line with your goals as a brand from a profit margin perspective, from a growth perspective, whatever you're trying to hit? So that simple split can give you a lot of information as to like where a brand can go as you start kind of layering on additional data points.
And this has got to be mentioned at first, so it's probably the one that affects the most. It's the biggest thing you see in these audits. Is it a really common thing? Is it uncommon for brands to be breaking this out properly?
I would say it's uncommon to be broken out properly. Usually, if it's broken out properly, they have a very like deep ads campaign suite. Things are very purposefully set up. Campaign structure and naming is pretty well defined. Like, it's pretty rare that it's split out properly.
And when we say, I think you mentioned this briefly, but how do you split it out properly? Is it done through negative keywords to make sure you're deduping the brand keywords from your broad campaigns?
Yeah, exactly. It's just negations if you're doing broad match and phrase match. And then it's just ensuring like good bid management of having, you know, your exact match bids are higher than your phrase or broad if necessary. And then having very specific branded targeting campaigns that will take that spend specifically for branded. And a big thing that Rob mentioned there is you're able to scale up a lot better if you segment them out, because that same example, if broad match running shoes, you have, let's say, you know, you're operating on an ad spend budget, you have broad spend running shoes at $100 a day budget. Maybe it spent $90 on branded and 10 on prospecting. And so you're actually like also just stopping it from scaling up on all of that generic when it maybe could have done really well, but you just never know because you didn't give it the opportunity to spend it, because it's also just capping out your budgets on your branded only.
And just not being efficient on the brand either, right? You could just be overspending on that. I would love to hear some feedback on that. If you're listening to that, I want to know what your broad campaigns are set at. So send me an email. Anything else on the audit side that we see affect a lot of people?
We've got a series coming out in the newsletter that's going to go through like kind of all the stages. We of course hit on advertising. We always take a look at listings. Like, very commonly when we look at like listing images or A+ content, like they might just be like very bad, which is pretty clear to see. But sometimes you end up with listings that are like, they actually look aesthetically quite nice, but when you dig into the content's not there from an Amazon perspective. Like, you have this beautiful image, but it's like great, but it's not actually providing like information or
the right information.
Yeah, that moves the customer closer to a purchase. Because on a listing, especially on mobile these days, like the bullets are truncated, so people aren't really going to read everything and they don't have a chance to go to the text. You actually have to do a lot of your heavy lifting and your selling within the images. So it's not just like, here's a picture of the product and here's a nice lifestyle image. It's got to be like, here's a picture and here's some benefits and some solutions and some pain points and like why you should buy it. So that's another common thing you run into, is just like content on the listing images versus just like what's beautiful.
I look forward to the whole series, and we won't spoil them here. There's a whole series coming in the newsletter on more of these things. But also, you had another topic that you wanted to talk about today, which was managing and reducing return rate on Amazon. It's probably, yeah, we're probably in peak season for that, or we're probably just out of peak season for that at the beginning of January, probably a ton of returns. What do you guys suggest to manage them?
Yeah. So I think return rate on Amazon is all about like getting ahead of it to whatever extent you can. Where you start is going to depend a lot on the data you have going into it. So if you're on a like direct consumer site, or if you have a direct consumer website and you've launched on Amazon, like why do people return on your website? And using that to influence your starting point. From your starting point, you're looking at building your listing in a way that accurately showcases the product while still selling it. So because it's so easy to return stuff on Amazon, you're probably going to run into a higher return rate simply because Amazon makes it so easy. It's one of the reasons people love to shop on Amazon. So it's important in that instance to like give people all the information they need to make a proper decision the first time. And some of those things, information you give them, you might think would like reduce conversion rate. A really good example of this, it's an overly simplified example, but we'll say it anyway, is compatibility. If you're selling a smart home product and you're not compatible with Apple HomeKit, say it, because you're going to get returns because of that reason. And it's like, is it going to hurt your conversion rate? Yes. If you said you were compatible, would you get more conversions? Yes. But are you just lying outright? Yes.
By omission, so that's yeah, in that case. So
that's an extreme example, but like think about that like in terms of the information you're providing to a customer. And if you can pitch it in a downside or a limitation in the form of a benefit by being a simpler product, an easier product, keeping costs down, improving quality, whatever it is,
stay out of the Apple ecosystem. Just like, don't get sucked in. Android rules.
Yeah. Exactly. But giving customers that information so they can make that decision. This gets a little bit more difficult in like the sizing world, or where it's like someone would want to try it on. So that's where you have to get creative. It's like, can you provide like an image of a model wearing the product and then provide like the height, weight, size of that, like that particular model. So a customer can say, hey, you know what? I'm also 5'9 and 165 pounds. That's a medium. Medium's probably going to fit me, versus just providing like, hey, here's like a picture of someone wearing the product and no like, information.
That. That's a great little tip.
So stuff like that, like how can you get creative? How can you like, can you give people instructions on how to like correctly measure for a size? Can you like provide like multiple lifestyle images for like, if you're selling sunglasses, like different face shapes that it's good for? Like, how can you make sure that a customer like feels confident making a decision the first time so they get the product and they're happy with it?
Having sold things, it's hard to underestimate how little people know about you, even when they buy from you often. And so, you know, I just think it just makes a lot of sense to have as much information there, educating you about what you're getting into it just makes sense.
It also comes down to setting expectations. So it's like, if you're selling a skincare product and you're like, hey, it takes 14 to 30 days to notice results.
Yeah.
Say it. Like, get a customer into the routine. Like, what do you want them to do when they first open the product? Do like, if you're selling like something that needs to be set up, do a lot of people screw up the setup? Do you have to provide a video on how to do it? Do you have to provide additional content? Do you have to put an insert in the package that really explains like, do these things first? Like, it doesn't, like, if there's little quirks about your product that a customer might run into and they think it doesn't work, but really they're just using it wrong. Like, kind of try and think through these things and like get creative in terms of like how to solve them. Because if you can have a customer create a really good first experience with a product, then there you like increases the chances of a good review while decreasing the chance of a return, and also increasing the chance of that customer being like an evangelist and just like sharing that they love this thing because they had a really good first experience. So set them up to have a really good one in that case.
And this is all taking place in the listing. You mentioned in you know, everywhere you have real estate, I guess. So in the product images as well, in the case of the size of the model. Just infuse your entire listing with this kind of information, preemptive information.
Yeah, and you got to get the data. Like, you might, if you're brand new to selling on Amazon, you're probably going to like make some assumptions. You're probably going to get them wrong because everyone's going to find a different way to use your product or interpret it. But as you start getting like return data, review data, if you can talk to customers, whatever you can do, you'll start sort of narrowing these things down and create some assumptions, some hypotheses, test them, and follow the data, of course.
Very cool. Nice. Anything to add there, Clifford?
Yeah, Rob mentioned reviews there as part of it, which is I think Amazon reviews get a bad rep because they're always in the news of, look at all these fake reviews and Amazon's cracking down on fake reviewers and again and again and again. Reality is it's just like the biggest marketplace and it's full of reviews. So it's a major problem that they have to deal with all the time. And do they actively try to deal with it? It definitely seems like they actually do actively try to deal with it. It's difficult for them to deal with. It's a lot of fake reviews and people find a new loophole every single time of how to get their fake reviews in there. However, that case that Rob mentioned is perfect because getting those good reviews is super important, of course, because there's no real other way to get them other than providing a good customer experience. You can't get rid of negative reviews. It's almost impossible. Like anyone who's sold on Amazon in the last 2 years used to be a little bit easier. The last couple of years, you can't comment on reviews. You can't do anything to them. Most of the time, you can't contact the customer. There's almost no way to do that. You're basically left with like someone could leave a 1-star review that said like, it's hard to put together. And that's it. You're stuck with that 1-star review forever. So like, it's a really big deal to preemptively do everything that you can to try to prevent those and make sure that your reviews are good, because a couple 1-star reviews early on can just sink a product forever, never get that traction. And you can also, in the same review note, let's not call this a fake review. Let's call it a influenced review. But if there's a way that you could have just one person somehow, maybe it's an influencer that you get to buy it or whatever, and they leave a video review. Like, these are so good. If you could get a video review of someone actually showing it, actually unboxing it without all your fancy brightening and coloring and branding that you're going to put on your listing images, the real product in front of them, unboxing it and opening it. As a customer, I watch those all the time. I don't watch the video and like listen to it, but I look at it to see, what does this actually look like? Like, not this fake stuff the brand's showing me. What does this product actually look like? How big is it actually when it's on like their desk? Like, that kind of stuff is really, really useful to have in product reviews. It's difficult to incentivize it. It's against every rule to kind of incentivize it. But there are different, like, you know, get influencers to buy it and you might be able to get them to leave a review, or you know, put an insert in your product packaging to say, we'd love you to share with others what you think and leave a video or something. You know, there's ways you can maybe get some people to naturally do it. And there's a little bit less above board ways to maybe get one or two in there that are on brand.
Read the Amazon TOS, operate within it. If you operate without it, that's your own decision to do so.
Thank you. We should say that on every podcast, I think. Every podcast we mention, every platform, we should just play Rob saying that. Two quick value bombs. We were just talking a little bit about Jeff Bezos. Nothing new in the news with him. I was just recalling how I thought it was interesting that of all the billionaires, he actually came across somehow like more down to earth and reasonable than some of the other ones in his month ago interview now. But then I Googled it right away just to see the top points. And the first thing that came up was about his 10,000 year clock that he has, which it's hard to get more supervillainy than a 10,000 year clock in a way. It's like, this will outlast all of you. That's what he would say, I think, right?
Yeah, it sounds about right, honestly. I'm not overly surprised he's got one, but, you know, he's got to keep time somehow. So
I wonder if he's doing all these, like, I feel like it's been a big thing on TikTok lately of these few people who are doing this super extreme anti-aging, like I take 200 supplements a day to make sure that
the vampire guy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You think Bezos is out there doing that just quietly?
I think he probably is taking as much young blood as he can. I don't know. No, I won't go ahead and say that. I'll retract that from the evidence. I just think we had Zuckerberg just a couple weeks come out about his fully self-sustainable macadamia nut, cow ecosystem that he's creating. And it's like, again, it's like, once I get that 10,000 year clock, I won't have to see any of you. They he's all sound the same, these guys.
He's living my dream. I always thought if I got like, I got very wealthy, I'd eventually have some land and maybe raise some pigs and just feed them like nuts and beer and like have a nice cow and feed it beer too. Like, Sounds great. Duck's just living it up.
I love macadamia nuts, so yeah. I can only imagine that a cattle fed on macadamia nut would be quite delicious.
I love beef. I love macadamia nuts. Combine them together. Sounds great.
Zuckerberg, yeah. We're waiting for our invite. Let's like get it together. We'll do a podcast with Jeff.
We'll do a live steak tasting, you know?
A live. This is just getting better and better.
I will not do a live steak tasting.
Are you vegetarian?
Yeah.
You're vegetarian. Vegan or vegetarian?
Vegetarian.
Vegetarian, smart man.
I technically also eat fish. I basically just don't eat cute animals.
Oh, that's nice.
That's fair. Well, I got some salmon in the freezer. We'll cook you a nice little salmon steak.
Can we feed that's the lovely. Salmon beer? Because that's, I think, the secret to Zuckerberg's whole operation.
Yeah, we could try. I don't know if they'll survive very long in beer, but we could get a vat and we could try.
Oh my God, this is the most bantery episode ever. Thanks for coming on today, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.